like to begin this evening with a couple of beautiful thoughts from Rav Soloveitchik, as we've been discussing in the past few parashios, taken primarily from the book of his essays entitled Abraham's Journey. He has a number of fascinating themes on these parashios dealing with Avraham Avinu, and I'd like to begin with yet another idea from the very, very same Sefer. And beginning with the opening Pasuk and Rashi in this week's Parsha, which we're very familiar with, the Parsha begins with Bayiyu Chaye Sara Me'ashana Ve'esrim Shana Ve'sheva Shanim Shnei Chaye Sara. The life of Sarah was 100 years, 20 years, and 7 years. These are the years of the life of Sarah. And Rashi comments that the Torah, rather than say what you would expect it to say, namely that Sarah lived Mea Ve'esrim Ve'sheva Shanim, 127 years, the Torah rather separates each unit. Mea Shana, 100 years, Esrim Shana, 20 years, Ve'sheva Shanim, and 7 years. And Rashi quotes, why does the Torah separate each of those units onto itself with the designation of 100 years, 20 years, 7 years? To teach you, says Rashi, to look at each period of life independently. And Rashi, of course, as we know, compares the 100 years to the 20 years in terms of Sarah's innocence as far as sin is concerned, and the 20 years is compared to the 7 years as far as Sarah's beauty is concerned. Okay, that's, we know, a famous Maimer Chazal quoted by Rashi as to what the significance of these various periods of Sarah's life represents. However, Rav Soloveitchik, though, beautifully noted the following. He said, clearly the Torah is looking to highlight different periods in Sarah's life. And the term Shana obviously represents a unit of time, be it 100 years, be it 20 years, be it 7 years. But you would expect, when describing different units of time in a person's life, to begin with that which comes first and then proceed as life goes along. First, Sarah was 7 years old, and let's say, according to Rashi's description, she was so beautiful at 7. And then she was 20 and still retained that beauty. And she was also innocent of sin. And then she was 100 and maintained that same innocence from sin. You would expect the Torah to go chronologically. If you're looking to compare Sarah's later years to her earlier years, that when she was 100, she was like 20. When she was 20, she was like 7. So then go in chronological order. Begin with Sarah describing her as 7 years old, and then 20 years old, then 100 years old. The Torah, yet, however, begins with Sarah in her older years. She was Mea Shana, Ve'esim Shana, Ve'sheva Shanim, working downward, reverse chronological order. What is the significance of that? And perhaps suggests of Soloveitchik beautifully as follows. He says the Torah perhaps seeks to teach us the following lesson here. That ordinarily when we speak of someone engaging in a biological aging process, so despite the best efforts of many, but such is the way of life, that you can't retain physically, biologically, the makeup of one's youth when one ages. That's just the way we are. That's the way human nature is. That's the way God made the world. However, perhaps, even if biologically, physically, we can't retain what is represented by youth as we age, and our physical strength wanes, and our hair whitens, whatever the description you want to use for the aging process is, but you can't stop it. You can't retain what you once had as you age. But nonetheless, youth and age are also representative of and symbolic of not just physically the way a person appears during his youth and during his older years, but there's an attitude of youth. There's an attitude that comes with age. And in that sense, it is not necessarily a given that as I age, I have to then move beyond the attitude of my childhood youth. Yes, physically speaking, biologically speaking, as a child matures and grows, what represented him as a child now terminates, and now the period of young adulthood sets in. When that ends, he moves on to his middle age or to his old age, so the previous period comes to an end and the next age begins. When it comes to the attitude represented by one who's a child, one who is a youth, and one who is an older individual, there is no and does not have to be any contradiction. Those attitudes don't have to be mutually exclusive of one another. In other words, Soloveitchik explains like this as follows, beautifully. You speak of a child. You think of the youthfulness of a child. What represents childhood in terms of attitude? You think of a young idealistic individual. You think of a young, inquisitive, curious child seeking truth. You think of the energy of youth. Oh, that energy of a child, the spiritual or physical restlessness of the young. Perhaps the bold impetuousness of the young. All of those qualities describe someone in the youth of his or her life. And when you think and describe someone who is older, you think of someone who has matured, someone who has gained wisdom through experience, someone who perhaps is a little bit more cautious in judgment after having lived many years. You've learned from experience to make more reserved judgments about matters and people. But those attitudes don't have to be mutually exclusive. Sometimes in people, that's the way it works out, that as they age, they lose that youthful curiosity, they lose that youthful vigor, they lose that youthful energy. But not always. As an example, I'll share, for example, one story that I related in the Halacha Shabbat Mincha Maariv one night last week. We were discussing Rav Eliashiv Zatzal when he was sitting Shiva already in the end of his life. It might have been for his daughter who predeceased him. So this was a 100-year-old man at this point in time. And throughout his life, he had the practice of getting up at around 3 a.m. in the morning to learn for a few hours, undisturbed, in the quiet of night, until he davened Shacharis. Now, when he's sitting Shiva, so you couldn't sit in a regular chair. You have to sit in a lower chair. However, he found it difficult at that advanced age to sit down on such a low chair and to get up and to sit down and to get up. And so he would, when he could, simply stand instead of sit. So when he davened Shacharis, instead of sitting down on a very low shiva chair and getting up for Baruch Hu and for Kaddish, he would just stand for a large part of davening so he wouldn't have to deal with the difficulties of sitting down and standing up. So when he got up at 3 a.m. every morning during Shiva to learn his usual morning Seder by himself in the middle of the night, he stood for all of those hours from 3 a.m. till whatever time it was he davened Shacharis, Vasikin, 6, 7, whatever it was. He stood for 3-4 hours straight just learning. And his children were troubled. This is a 100-year-old man. He's all by himself. He's standing for 4 hours straight. This is not a good idea. They talked to his doctor, said, please tell him this is a sakana, he can't do this. And the doctor said, do you think it is normal for someone of that age to be able to get up at 3 a.m. and learn 3-4 hours straight standing to begin with? So this is so beyond what is the norm for someone at that age. I'm not getting involved in this. This is already lamala menateva. The point being that you can have someone who is perhaps at that age, and yet his vigor and his excitement for learning and his energy is completely undiminished. Undiminished. So although, yes, we would expect, and in most cases it is so, that when one is at that advanced age, one is already, compared to his youthful energy and excitement, a different person, understandably so. But came to a person like Rav Eliashiv, when it came to learning Torah, 100 years old, was no different than 25 years old. Stood for 3-4 hours straight, just didn't stop, learned nonstop. Unbelievable. So it is possible to have that attitude, that vigor, that energy, that excitement of the youth, even when one is already at an older age. And perhaps, as Soloveitchik suggests, In a sense, that is what the Torah is describing when it speaks of Sarah's life. It speaks first of she was Mea Shana, V'Esrim Shana, V'Sheva Shanim. Not because the qualities of one period in her life ended and were then succeeded by the next, but because they were all combined in one. That even when she was 100 years old, she still maintained that same energetic attitude and excitement and idealism that she had when she was youthfulness, when she was in her youth. And the same says of Soloveitchik was true of Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu didn't stop. He was recruiting believers in God throughout his life for decades and decades. He's recruiting thousands, tens of thousands of people to believe in the Ribono Shel Olam. And to do so, you have to go against the pressures of society. You have to be a bit of an iconoclast. You have to be a bit of a bold, courageous, fearless spiritual warrior. You would have expected by the time he ages, okay, he's going to slow down, he'll soften up a little bit, did my part, ready for retirement, not going to work so hard anymore. Didn't stop. He maintained that youthfulness, that vigor, that spiritual restlessness, that energy, that boldness throughout his life. That, says Soloveitchik, is what describes Avram and Sarah. The attitudes of youth blended with the experience of age, and one was not mutually exclusive of the other. And then Soloveitchik suggests beautifully as follows. These are our forebearers, our patriarch, our matriarch, the founders of our people. This ability, this quality of Avram and Sarah to be able to have at the very same time the attitude of the youth, the vigor, the energy, the spiritual restlessness, the curiosity, the boldness, together with the wisdom and the experience of age and the cautious judgment of age, for each and every one of us, both must coexist. And for every religious Jew, they must coexist. Consider the following beautiful idea. Take one of the most significant mitzvahs that we all have, Talmud Torah, to engage in the study of Torah. Talmud Torah is a mitzvah, says Rav Soloveitchik, which as a person ages, he becomes wiser, more experienced, more adept, more skilled. It requires analytical skills, intellectual development. It requires analysis. A younger child whose mind is not fully developed yet can't appreciate the intellectual analysis of an older Talmud scholar. That's very obvious. With years, with time, you become more experienced, you accomplish more, you become more wise. Hence, the Gemara actually says, Zaken stands for Zesha Kana Chachma. Zaken, which means older individual, is synonymous in some ways with one who is a wiser individual. So when it comes to the life of a Jew engaged in Talmud Torah, there are benefits to experience, to age, to wisdom. And yet take other mitzvos, critical mitzvos of a religious Jewish life. Tefillah. When it comes to tefillah, when it comes to prayer, it's just the reverse. Whereas when it comes to Talmud study, Torah study, a person has to be confident in his ability to understand and to challenge and to question. When it comes to tefillah, then one must approach a Kaddish Baruch with a very different attitude. With the attitude of a humble, helpless, almost sense of hopelessness. Tefillah is most energized and powerful when I come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I say, Ma'anu, what do we have for us? We have nothing. Tefillah la'ani ki yatov. Lefnei Hashem ki yishbol sicha. We pour out our hearts to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like a poor person who has nothing. Tefillah is most powerful and motivated when I come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the realization that I have nothing on my own. I appeal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Refa'enu, Baruch Aleinu, give us this, give us that, give us health, give us parnasa, because I can't provide for myself at all. I'm totally dependent on Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's the attitude of one who has no confidence, no arrogance, no airs about him whatsoever, but rather the child who is helpless on his own and just turns to a parent and says, I need everything, provide for me. That is the attitude of one who's engaged in tefillah. So very different attitude. Engaging in Talmud Torah requires the confidence and the realization that I can question, analyze, understand, answer, engage in Talmud Torah study with those who preceded me, with those who are older than me. And yet tefillah requires the attitude of, I'm a hopeless, helpless child cast adrift by myself. I need a Kaddish Baruch Hu to provide everything for me. And the same is true for emunah, for faith. Faith also, as we know, when it comes to faith, you can't walk in with a sense of arrogance. Only what I understand, I accept, has to all meet the rational logic of my mind, and if I don't get it, I reject it. That's not faith. Faith means that a person comes to Kaddish Baruch Hu and says, I accept, I believe, I will do. It's also the innocence of a child, of the youthful mind that is perhaps, in a certain sense, almost possesses a naivete that I don't understand, but I trust, I follow, I believe. That's the emunah of the youthful mind. And for a religious Jew, both and all of those attitudes must coexist, says Rav Soloveitchik. And as he describes it, he says, that's what Avraham excelled at. Avraham, who with his own inquisitive mind, over the years, as we described in a recent shir, from the time he was 3 till the time he was 40, he started questioning, analyzing, looking around, investigating. He, as his mind developed, and as he questioned and took nothing for granted, on his own came to the realization that there is a Borei Olam, there is a creator. He had that obvious confidence in his ability to analyze, to question, to understand. On the other hand, when it came time for the Nisan of the Akedah, which he could have so easily and so logically have questioned, how can you demand that I kill my son? I've been preaching for decades against these Ovdei Avodah Zarah who engaged in child sacrifice, in Molech. And now I'm going to go and completely undo everything that I stood for all these decades. My life's work has been thrown up in smoke because I'm going to sacrifice my own son after I've been preaching against that practice for so many years. And that promise that you made to me about my child being the forefather of a nation, Avram could have challenged this so easily and so powerfully with his intellect and his rational, logical thinking. And yet, that's where the faith came in. Just do. Just did. Just went. No questions, not a word. Just acceptance. So that blending of both attitudes, the attitude of the confidence that comes with experience, that comes with age, and the attitude of the youthful acceptance of, I don't understand, I just believe, I follow, I do as a Kaddish Baruch Hu instructs me to. And that, which is represented by Avraham, blending both the attitude of the childlike youth and the wisdom of the aged, elderly individual, both are blended into the life of a religious Jew. And Soloveitchik then, beautifully, cites a fascinating Gemara in Bava Kamma, Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis. And the Gemara is discussing currency, redeeming something onto coins. And the Gemara, their comments as follows. The Gemara cites a Brisa, which says that the coin of Yerushalayim had David and Shlomo, their images on one side, and the image of Yerushalayim on the other side. Okay, seems like an innocent statement. The currency that was used in Yerushalayim back in the day had images of the founding kings of the Davidic dynasty, David and Shlomo, and Yerushalayim on either side of the coin. And the Gemara says the following somewhat puzzling statement. Vezeho matbeah shel Avram Avinu. What was the coin of Avram Avinu? Okay. What was Avram Avinu's coin? So the Gemara says, Zakein uzakeina mitzad echad, an older man, older woman on one side of the coin, ubachar ubasula mitzad acher, and a young man and young woman on the reverse side of the coin. What does that mean? So Ashi says, the coin of Avram had a picture of Avram and Sarah on one side, and had a picture of Yitzchak and Rivka on the other side. Okay, family coin minted in honor of the two couples. That's Rashi's pshat. The Maharsha suggests that no, maybe both sides were images of Avram and Sarah, but the coin represented and celebrated the miracle that they were zochet to. Avram and Sarah were both old individuals, and suddenly, miraculously, they became youthful again with the birth of Yitzchak. So on the one hand, on one side of the coin, Zakein uzakeina, Avram and Sarah, 100 years old, 90 years old. On the other side of the coin, a young man and young woman, because whereas initially Vadoni Zakein, Vani Zakanti, they were so old, suddenly they became youthful again. That's the Mashal's interpretation of the Gemara. That the coin of Avram represented that miracle of Zakein and Zakena, Bachar Basula, Avram and Sarah, old yet young. If Soloveitchik says so beautifully as follows, says perhaps the message is exactly this. The coin of Avraham, on the one side had a Zakein and a Zakena, on the other hand, on the other side it had a Bachar and a Basula. Because Avram and Sarah presented that idea of blending the personality traits, the attitudes, on the one hand of the youthful vigor and energy and never relenting in their spiritual quest and pursuit to bring more people closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That same youthfulness was there even as they were already on the other side of the coin, older individuals in terms of their physical years, and even as they had already attained the wisdom that comes with experience and age, but there were two sides to one coin. They maintained both. They never lost that vigor and energy and quest for truth in their as they aged, even as they physically lost their youthfulness, but that same quality of youthfulness remained with them, even as they aged. So the Zakin and the Zakena, the Bachar and Basula, on two sides of one coin, that represented the coin of Avraham Avinu. So that was the first thought I wanted to share with you from a Soloveitchik. Beautiful, beautiful ideas to what every Jew should aspire to accomplish. And a Soloveitchik echoed this theme elsewhere as well in a eulogy for Rav Chaim Heller, Zatzal, a great, great scholar who Rav Soloveitchik looked to as one of his Rebbeim. He also there develops this very same idea that even as someone ages, physically speaking, one must always strive and can still retain that youthful energy, that youthful quest for knowledge, that youthful curiosity for knowledge, that youthful vigor in one's pursuit of truth and in pursuit of Avodas Hashem that can still be maintained. Moving on, one other thought of Soloveitchik develops in relation to these parshios. Obviously, this week's parsha speaks of the transition, if you will, as the Mesorah is handed over from Avraham to Yitzchak. And in that regard, there's a beautiful, beautiful idea of Soloveitchik raises and suggests as follows. Jump back for a moment to the very beginning, the first pasuk of next week's parsha, Toldos. Ve'ela Toldos, Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holeris Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. So Rashi, their questions, if the pasuk already begins with Ve'ela Toldos, Yitzchak ben Avram, that these, the pasuk tells us, are the offspring of Yitzchak ben Avram, why then does the pasuk need to repeat Avram holeris Yitzchak? He just told me he's Yitzchak ben Avram. Why repeat Avram holeris Yitzchak? Unnecessary. So Rashi says as follows, again, first pasuk of next week's parsha, because the Leitzani Hador, the scorners of that generation, were complaining, were claiming and spreading rumors that Sarah conceived not from Avram, but from Avimelech. After all these years with Avram, and nothing happens, and suddenly now, after she spends the night with Avimelech, a little while later, boom, she conceives, she has a child. Ah, it's obviously Avimelech's child. So what did Kadosh Baruch Hu do? So Kadosh Baruch Hu made it that Yitzchak resembled Avram so, so closely that everyone recognized that this was Yitzchak ben Avram, and clearly Avram holds Yitzchak. Fine. That's Rashi, the beginning of next week's parsha. People claimed, scorners, Leitzanim claimed, the cynics claimed that it was Sarah and Avimelech, not Sarah and Avram, who had produced Yitzchak. So Soloveitchik notes that if you look back, however, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Zayin, last week's parsha, right after Yitzchak is born. So here the Pasuk says that right after Yitzchak is born, and Avram circumcises Yitzchak, Pasuk then says that Tomer, Sarah says, Mi milel la Avraham heinika vonim Sarah. Sarah says, Who is the one who spoke to Avram, who promised Avram this child? Look at how great HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And who had promised Avram that Sarah would nurse children. Mimi Lala Avram, who made this promise to Avram? Hanika Vanam Sarah, that Sarah would nurse children. Okay, so speaking praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, clearly. So Rashi there says, Hanika Banim Sarah. Sarah nursed children in the plural. What children? Child. Says Rashi, what happened? That when they made this big celebration for the day that Yitzchak was weaned, Sarah was given the children, the babies of all these other princesses, noble women, who had been claiming that no, this wasn't Sarah's child. This is just some abandoned kid that Avram and Sarah found on the streets and brought into their house and claimed that it's theirs. So Sarah was miraculously able to nurse all of their children to prove, no, this is my child, not some deserted child found in the streets. So Soloveitchik notes, in this pasuk, in last week's parasha, what were the rumors? The rumors there were that this wasn't Sarah's child, nor Avram's child. It was a deserted child they found in the streets. Yet in next week's parasha, what's the rumor? The rumor is that it was Sarah's child, but it wasn't Avram's child. So Soloveitchik says, if you're going to start cynically making up stories, the first rumor makes more sense, last week's rumor. Meaning, Avram and Sarah are both elderly. You're going to tell me it's not possible. It's not their child. They found it on the street. Okay. At least that's logical as a claim that neither one was capable of giving birth. But next week's rumor, yeah, it was Sarah's child, but not Avram's child. What sense does that make? If anything, if Sarah's capable of giving birth at the age of 90, well then, why couldn't Avram? And especially since Avram already did give birth to Yishmael at the age of 86. So, how does it make any sense in next week's parasha to reject the notion that Avram gave birth, but yes, Sarah did give birth? Last week's rumor, okay, I can understand where they're coming from. Neither one of them gave birth. Next week's rumor makes no sense whatsoever. Only Sarah gave birth, not Avram? What logic is there to that? How does one understand that rumor? So Soloveitchik suggests beautifully as follows, B'derech Hadrush, that when Rashi tells us in next week's parasha that they refused to believe that Avram gave birth to Yitzchak, it was only Sarah. That represents, he suggests, is the following idea. It's a metaphor that represents something. It represents the unwillingness of people of that generation to accept the fact that Avraham was the father of Yitzchak. Why? So Soloveitchik says like this. He says, people we know from the psukim we've read respected Avraham. You look at the beginning of this week's parasha, Hayasara, when Avraham interacts with the Bnei Ches, looking for a barrel pot for Sarah, they're very respectful. Right? Nesil Akim Ataba Sochenu, wow, you are a prince of God. We really respect you for who you are, Avram. We look at Avimelech. Avimelech, when he parts ways with Avram, last week's parasha, so he wants to make a covenant with him, a treaty with him, because he finally realizes that Avram is not someone you want to tangle with. And people had a reverence for Avram. When did that turn into scorn and to mockery, into cynical comments? When Yitzchak is born. Why? So the Rav Soloveitchik suggests like this. So long as Avraham is Avraham, preaching godliness, preaching belief in one God, living life very differently than everybody else, smashing our idols, okay, we can accept that, we can respect that, you can live life as you want to, and either we'll accept it or we won't accept it, but no, you're free to choose as you wish. Once, though, there's now a son who's now going to be Avram's spiritual heir. Oh, this is not ending with Avram. This is going to be now a new way of life that's going to be passed along to the next generation. All of a sudden, they're not so accepting anymore. This is not just a one-time Avraham fad. This is now a new way of life that is now going to be taught, preached, spread for generations to come. This is here to stay. Oh no, we can't accept that. This is not Avraham's son. Sarah's son they could accept. Why? So Soloveitchik suggests as follows. He says, Sarah presents the softer approach to Judaism, to life of religion. Meaning, Soloveitchik suggests as follows. You know what? Religion is nice. There is ritual. There is ceremony. There are religious ideals and morals that I very much agree with, that I very much accept, that I enjoy. You know, there are certain parts of religion that everyone can appreciate, can connect to, can adopt. But when it comes to the challenges of living by a very strict, structured set of religious laws, all of a sudden, sometimes it gets challenging. You know, I like to live Judaism loosely. I like to adopt the, you know, the Friday night chalant. That's great. I'll go for that. The Friday night oneg Shabbos, the tish. That's enjoyable. You know, I like the lighting of the menorah, Hanukkah time. That's great. Purim is especially a favorite. Oh, Pesach Seder with family. It's also nice. I'll go for that. But once you start getting to the, you know, you got to be very careful about what you can't do on Shabbos. You got to be very careful about what you have to do every single day within a certain time frame. Once you start getting a little bit too inflexible for me, a little too firm and rigid for me, then I'm not so quick to adopt. So Soloveitchik suggests that perhaps the religious lifestyle that is represented by Sarah is that which people find to be very soft and beautiful and inviting about religious life. And the symbolism of the Avraham in the Masorah of Judaism is that which is the more structured way of halachic living. And perhaps the idea that Chazal are alluding to, that once Yitzchak was born, raised, people accepted the fact that this was Sarah's son, but not Avram's son, perhaps suggests, Rav Soloveitchik, is their willingness to, you know, adopt certain elements of what religion has to offer, what Yiddishkeit has to offer, but not everything, which sadly sometimes you see with those who are not yet part of the frum community, that they're willing to take certain elements and components of what Judaism represents, but they're a little slower to adopt Judaism in its entirety, in its totality. And that, suggests Soloveitchik, was the challenge that these individuals at the time of Avram Sarah were being confronted by when they saw that Judaism is here to stay. It's being passed along to the next generation. It's now Sarah and Avram have an heir, a spiritual heir, to pass along their legacy to. Their world outlook is being passed along to Yitzchak, and it's here to stay. Suddenly they were troubled by this idea of the challenge to commit fully to the life of Yiddishkeit, of Yiras Shemayim. That was the late Sonim, who didn't want to accept everything as Avraham did, but rather preferred to take a softer approach. But of course, the challenge is, it's a package deal. It all comes together. We take the ceremony, the ritual of Yiddishkeit, along with the halacha that gives us a very structured way of life. And that is the Masorah that is encapsulated by these two role models of Avraham and Sarah.